MRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Measles, mostly among the unvaccinated, continues to spread in Virginia. A late freeze, a drought, and war mean lower crop yields this season for farmers in the Shenandoah Valley. Nexus, again, allegedly violates court orders. And the Stanton community works to revive a historic downtown theater. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, June 5th. Measles cases continue to spread, according to new data from the Virginia Department of Health. As of Thursday, there have been 91 cases reported in Virginia so far this year. That's up from 64 a week ago. That includes an ongoing outbreak in Buckingham County. More than 85% of the cases are in unvaccinated people. Health officials are asking residents to report possible exposures to VDH at vdh.virginia.gov/measles. The recent drought and a late spring freeze have not been good for crops and hayfields in the Shenandoah Valley. Because of that, Virginia farmers have had lower crop yields, and they are worried about future supplies for the upcoming months. WHSV reports that rising fuel and fertilizer costs are not helping the situation either. If the dry spell continues, farmers will have to find alternative ways to stock up for the winter. The latest drought monitor for Virginia, released Thursday, shows the valley in moderate to severe drought, with many areas east of the Blue Ridge still in extreme drought. And the ongoing legal saga of the business conglomeration Nexus, formerly based in Augusta County, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau alleges that the company has violated court orders yet again. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
2 years ago, Nexus and three of its executives, married couple Michael Donovan and Richard Moore, and former Vice President of Operations Evan Ajean, were ordered by a federal judge to pay more than $811 million in restitution and penalties to the CFPB and multiple state governments. More than a quarter of that money was earmarked for the clients they had been found liable for deceiving and threatening in the immigration bond business. They quickly sold the Nexus companies for $3.50 to a Pennsylvania-based bail bondsman, Vincent Smith. In March of this year, Chief U.S. District Judge Elizabeth K. Dillon ordered the corporate entities and Donovan and Ajean to be held in civil contempt and declared the sale, which included protected customer information and contracts, void. The judge ordered the defendants to swear they accepted the denial of the sale and ordered Smith's company, Libre Immigration Services, or LIS, to destroy any consumer information it got from Nexus and give back any money it had collected from Nexus clients. Donovan, Ajean, and Smith then filed affidavits saying they accepted the rescission of the sale. Smith alleged that his company's client base is entirely new and has never had access to Nexus customer information or contracts. The CFPB wrote to the court last week that these claims were not credible, and they include a sworn affidavit from a recent LIS employee who had formerly worked for Nexus. The recent employee claims that LIS had been attempting to collect money from consumers who had signed contracts with Nexus, and that a database of their information had been extracted by another LIS employee. Judge Dillon has not yet responded to these filings. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Find more details about this case and all of Nexus's legal troubles at WMRA.org and on our app. A Shenandoah County solar panel producer is establishing a new facility in Mount Jackson. Governor Abigail Spanberger's office announced Thursday that M Solar Manufacturing will invest more than $23 million for a 56,000-square-foot facility to produce high-efficiency solar modules for large-scale energy projects. The investment is expected to create 150 new jobs. The new fiscal year starts next month, but Virginia still has no budget, and leaders in the General Assembly are still divided over what to do about a tax break for data centers. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
Virginia promised a huge tax break to data centers until 2035, although now Senate Democrats want to eliminate the sales and use tax exemption to pay for raises for teachers and childcare programs. Speaking to a group of business leaders in Northern Virginia this week, Speaker of the House Don Scott says eliminating the tax exemption would be going back on a promise.
We need to make sure that we do not do anything to kill the golden goose. I really don't care about specific industry. I care about keeping our word to businesses that we attract and that we want to retain in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's what I care about.
He says the tax exemption is a way to make sure data centers use renewable energy and build new infrastructure to drive down utility costs. Fairfax County Board of Supervisors Chairman Jeff McKay says he agrees with Speaker Scott.
I think if we can get a trade-off and we can get much, much more stringent environmental standards, as the speaker said, supporting renewable energy anytime we can to power these.
The House and Senate will be meeting later this month to send some kind of compromise to the governor before the end of the month. The new fiscal year starts at the beginning of next month. Reporting from Tyson's Corner, I'm Michael Pope.
A Lynchburg judge has again ordered Virginia State Police to stop running background checks on private gun sales. Dean Mirshahi with VPM News reports.
Last October, Lynchburg Circuit Court Judge Patrick Heath struck down Virginia's universal background check law for private firearm sales. Then in April, a new state law went into effect that called for state police to run checks on private sales. On Wednesday, Judge Heath denied the state's effort to dissolve his 2025 ruling, blocking VSP from doing background checks for private sales by unlicensed dealers at places like gun shows. Philip Van Cleve is president of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, a pro-gun rights group that challenged the state's law. He hailed the decision as a victory.
We anticipate the law being DOA.
The Attorney General's office says it's reviewing the judge's ruling, and additional arguments are expected to be held later this month.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. So could Virginia soon have a legal marijuana marketplace despite a gubernatorial veto? Michael Pope and Radio IQ politics analyst Jeff Shapiro discuss that in the week that was in state politics and government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, starting with the ongoing budget impasse. Jeff Shapiro, the General Assembly and the governor have been locked in this controversy since March, and now it looks like the General Assembly seems to be poised to put the marijuana marketplace bill into the budget, despite the fact the governor's already vetoed it.
It wouldn't be the first time that significant policy is carried out through the budget as an omnibus, if you will, an umbrella under which all sorts of things take place. Given the limited amount of time remaining, the June 30th deadline to have a budget in place, this is all unfolding, while two other developments need to be noted. The administration, I guess this is part of the bigger puzzle, now says it is projecting an additional $1.5 billion in fresh cash over the next three spending cycles. That would be more than enough to close the gap in spending between the House and Senate versions of the budget. And this is important. The UVA Weldon Cooper Center, that's an economic and demographic think tank up in Charlottesville, is predicting a mild recession sometime this year. And this is attributed to continuing losses in federal employment. And we've got to think about inflation, the Iran war, and the resulting oil shock. So a lot going on the economic, fiscal, and budgetary front.
So former Governor Glenn Youngkin was frequently accused of politicizing higher ed appointments. Now we've got Governor Spanberger, and she seems to be undergoing kind of the same criticism of her actions at Virginia Tech.
This was going to happen, Michael, as soon as the Democrats took back the governorship. And you were going to expect, and sure enough, we have Republicans claiming that Abigail Spanberger is politicizing public higher education. At this point, of course, a lot of it has to do with the dismissal, her dismissal of John Rockovich, the rector, a Republican appointee, as the chair of the Virginia Tech governing board. She's alleging unspecified ethical violations on his part. He says there's nothing to it and that he intends to complete his term, which runs through June 2027. All of this going on at the same time, the Virginia Tech board is meeting and is installing new leadership, rector and vice rector. By the way, they are Republican appointees, Youngkin Republican appointees, and sets up an interesting contrast given that there is Democratic gubernatorial leadership in Richmond.
So Virginia is about to have a bunch of new gun violence prevention laws that go into effect in July, and there are a bunch of prosecutors throughout Virginia who say they are not going to enforce the new assault weapons ban and the new high capacity magazine ban. How is that going to work?
Well, we've got almost 10 Republican, largely rural counties whose Commonwealth's attorneys and sheriffs are saying they don't intend to enforce these bans, which would take place on July 1st. The latest addition to this list would be Patrick County down on the North Carolina line. In rural Virginia, 2A rights are a non-negotiable demand. And I think this is going to set up sort of an interesting test for the governor and the attorney general, Jay Jones. So let's see what happens on or after the 1st of July when this ban is supposed to take effect.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Finally today, artists, local leaders, and other community members are working to revive a historic theater in downtown Stanton as a multi-purpose performing arts venue and community center. WMRA's Calvin Pinn checked in with the Arcadia Project.
Grotesque, laughing stone faces and bright mosaics overlook East Beverly Street in Stanton on the facade of the building formerly known as the Dixie Theater. The style recalls the building's history as a space for vaudeville and burlesque performances. The Arcadia Project is working to restore the space for modern audiences while preserving the eclectic element of the theater's history. In the meantime, though, there's plenty of work to be done.
We are happy that we are under construction, and if you drive by the building, you will see all kinds of activity inside, buzz saws and plumbers and electricians going, like, it's like a busy as a beehive in there.
Pam Wagner is the executive director and co-founder of the Arcadia Project. She hopes that the project will fill a void for a higher capacity performance arts venue in Stanton once construction is done and the building is ready to welcome audiences and artists.
There's so much talent in the Valley. And that's what we learned when we did the survey. People want to give back, and they have deep knowledge about how to do really cool things. And there's a desire to share that with the next generation. And we really want to create a platform where that can happen.
The theater was built in 1913 in the Italian Renaissance Revival style and named the New Theater. It was destroyed by a fire in 1936 and then rebuilt as an Art Deco style movie theater and renamed the Dixie Theater. That operated as a four-screen movie theater until closing in 2014 because a switch to digital projection for film screenings was not feasible. The Arcadia Project has been in the works for nearly a decade, while state funding and in-kind donations were secured in the past couple of years. Construction started in February. The effort is in its first phase, which is focused on renovating the stage and dance hall and opening a cafe in the building's entrance. Wagner said the theater is on track to open early next year. And that only covers 75% of the building, though. The Arcadia Project is raising funds for Phase 2, which would renovate the single-screen movie theater adjacent to the live performance space and build classrooms and a recording studio upstairs. Community feedback has guided the effort.
All the programming and architectural design for the building was guided by a survey that we did at the very beginning of taking on this project, where we asked the community what they wanted to see happen inside the building.
Themed movie screenings, a listening room, and workshops for podcasting and storytelling, among other crafts, are some of the options that will be offered at the theater. Meanwhile, the Arcadia Project is whetting audiences' appetites with a summer concert series on the street right outside the building. That starts this Saturday with the William Hayes Duo. Later this month, the folk duo The Honey Dew Drops will perform a benefit concert at Trinity Church just up the street from the theater to raise funds for Phase 2 of the project.
Mostly we've been able to come to various corners of the world to play music because there are communities there that want music to happen. It's basically like people in the town that are trying to raise money and put their heads together in order to bring about this kind of space that is going to be super inclusive and full of creativity. And that stuff is just the best part of our life for me.
Keggy Parrish is one half of the Honey Dew Drops, along with his partner Laura Wortman. The group recently relocated to Stanton from Baltimore and were immediately interested in the Arcadia Project.
These places are historic. These places are full. Even if they're, empty for a while, they're still full of a kind of spirit that is just really special. It's this kind of thing that is only gained with time.
Their concert is on June 27th, and as work continues, Wagner emphasized the importance of having performances near the space while the community waits for the doors to open.
We have felt all along that we need to demonstrate what we will bring to the community once our doors are open. So we've done a series of activities, performances, events, the entire time we've been working on this renovation.
Until that time, the Arcadia Project is focusing on trading the sound of construction with the sound of live music. For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
We've posted photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.